dismantled, never again to be deployed. And the world breathed a sigh of relief after the revolution.
Welcome to Raising Sand Radio. I'm your host, Susan Gallimore, and a favorite piece of music by Dave Rovix, After the Revolution, to welcome Mike Ferner of Veterans for Peace and Zach Schott of Iraq Veterans Against War with me on the 8th anniversary of the invasion of Iraq. We were able to listen to both Zach and Mike through the grace of Skype. So the audio may be a little compromised, but I think it's worth it to have both of them on at the same time. Welcome, Mike Ferner.
Hello.
And also Zach Schott, who is the very newest president of the Baton Rouge chapter of Iraq Veterans Against War. Welcome, Zach.
Thank you.
And congratulations.
Thanks a lot.
So the anniversary of the so-called War on Terror is March 19th, and we're going to talk about that today. A lot has happened in the last decade, and we're going to unpeel some of that onion. We're also going to talk about Bradley Manning and the latest events with Bradley Manning. Crowley just lost his job for standing up and speaking the truth. So let's begin with general description of what Veterans for Peace is doing on March 19th for this anniversary. Mike Ferner.
We are Veterans for Peace, along with Iraq Veterans Against the War, Vietnam Veterans Against the War, and March Forward, are sponsoring what we're calling a civil resistance action at the White House. And it follows on one that we did in this past December. There were 131 people got arrested, and we're planning for more people than that this time. So we're hoping to show that the resistance to these wars is increasing, and probably be doing something similar to what we did in December, which was some people handcuffed themselves or chained themselves to the White House fence, and we stayed there till we were arrested. And we're doing this because, as you said, we're marking the 8th anniversary of the invasion of Iraq, and over a million people have been killed, and the horror stories just go on, and they don't stop, and they won't stop as long as our troops are in Iraq and Afghanistan. And we, this Veterans Coalition, is doing whatever we can in a nonviolent way to up the resistance and hopefully get people around the country to do more of the same. And last time we did this in December, there were actions in San Francisco and New York and a few other cities, numbers of people getting arrested in each of those places. So we're hoping this will spread, particularly now that we've got the example of what's been going on in Northern Africa.
And Zach, what is IVAW doing?
Of course, we are the veterans of this occupation, and IVAW members will be in attendance on the 19th, and our plan is to show up in uniform to let the public know who it is that is getting arrested for standing up for the injustice of these occupations, the mistreatment of Bradley Manning. It's just important that we're all there in attendance. Our executive director will be there. Key members in the organization will be there. So we will be standing in solidarity with the other organizations for this action.
And let's talk a little bit about your histories. Mike Ferner was a Vietnam vet.
Well, I was a Navy corpsman during the war in Vietnam. I worked at a Navy hospital here in the United States for most of my hitch, and was on an aircraft carrier for the last 6 months or so. And when I was at the hospital, I took care of young men that were coming back from Vietnam and Cambodia, even though we didn't have anybody in Cambodia. Somehow we were getting wounded back from there. But after doing that for a couple of years, it's a very eye-opening experience. And I had my doubts about going into the military before I did, but in those days, in 1969, if you were breathing and walking, you had a pretty good chance you're going to get drafted. So like a lot of other young men, I enlisted. So after working at that hospital for a couple of years, it became pretty clear to me that what we were doing was just senseless. And when you started looking at what we were doing to the people in Indochina, it was much worse than just senseless. It was criminal on a huge scale. So I decided I couldn't participate anymore, and I filed an application to get out as a conscientious objector, and eventually the Navy agreed with me and discharged me in 1973, and I've been active in the peace movement and labor movement, environmental movement, ever since then.
And you were most recently also the president of Vets for Peace for a couple of years, right?
Correct.
And Zach, you are an Iraq War veteran. Tell our listeners about that.
Yes, I joined the military, unfortunately, after the so-called mission accomplished. And I grew up in a small town in northwest Georgia, so I'm sure a lot of people know about that wood. It's deep in the heart of the Bible Belt, and there's not a lot of speaking out, especially on this type of scale. So I joined the military blindly as a scout, did reconnaissance, and from there I went to the 10th Mountain Division, which is one of the more highly deployable divisions in the military as far as the Army goes, alongside with 82nd Airborne, 101st, and 1st Cav, and the like. It was during the initial surge in August of 06, 2 months after I had been in country, I was hit by a roadside bomb, sending me out of country for a brief time. I was hit by 3155 mortar rounds. And I was the gunner of my platoon leader's truck during that time. So I received the Purple Heart and went home.
What were your injuries?
A grade 3 lacerated spleen, fractured ribs, punctured lung, traumatic brain injury, a small abrasion to the head. Luckily, it was all internal, or unluckily, but I'm still walking here today and fighting. So, yeah, after that amount of time, I went back to the stateside after having some surgeries and the green zone and then Germany and Walter Reed. I was given about 4 months to kind of just sit back on rear detachment and to just be safe. And it was really weird during that time. I started seeking mental health help, to see what was going on, because I was already experiencing flashbacks. And my job a lot of times being on rear detachment was to sit by the phones for 24-hour duty and to just wait for phone calls to come in. And most of those phone calls that came in were from out of country notifying us of the deaths within the unit. And so during this time, I'm sitting here literally on 24-hour duty while listening and looking at the list come in of your dead comrades. And so I was all on different kinds of psychotropic medications to help with the sleep and anxiety, and I deployed again to finish my unit's 15-month tour in Iraq. And it was during that time that I saw that the mission had not changed at all. We weren't doing any good. It was all missions were based off of a he said, she said kind of deal, and nothing ever resulted in, we never got any real hard intel that resulted in keeping Iraq any safer. So as a result of that, when I got out of Iraq, I had 6 months left on military until I got out, and I started seeking civilian counseling. And that allowed me to go a little bit further and to really start to question things, without having that fear of what the military might say. And that stigma that they put on soldiers for questioning stuff and having concern. And it was at that point that I started, redirecting my focus towards researching what exactly was going on and why we were doing this. And I got out of the military in June of 2008 and immediately found Iraq Veterans Against the War and been organizing with them ever since.
So you're based in Baton Rouge, which is where you grew up?
No, I actually grew up in northwest Georgia. Okay. I was a member of the Atlanta chapter of IVAW there. Just recently moved to Baton Rouge and trying to reorganize. re-energize, really, the Iraq and Afghanistan veterans around this area.
Well, let's talk about that re-energizing. Given everything that is happening in the world today, and let's face it, there's a lot of it, it does seem like the war has fallen off, and certainly the treatment of troops has definitely fallen off the front pages, and the media doesn't cover it that much. Let's talk about from your point of view. I mean, you talked about lots of people in attendance at these upcoming events. What about the coverage?
Yeah, the coverage from the event in December at the White House that we did was better than usual.
Well, let me just take a moment here and describe it. There was a lot of video. Chris Hedges was there, a lot of good speakers. Let's just describe that for a moment.
Daniel Ellsberg was there, and he spoke and obviously talked about the Pentagon Papers and how that was similar to WikiLeaks releases, and why that's a good thing for the country as opposed to what's being said these days by congressional leaders and others. And Chris Hedges was there, and he read a very powerful statement about resistance and the importance of maintaining that resistance even when things look pretty grim. And we had a number of people who spoke that were very eloquent and described why they were there and what life experiences had brought them to that point, and why they decided to take a step of getting arrested and to protest the wars. And we had, I thought, better than usual press coverage of the event, although that doesn't take a whole lot when you're talking about the corporate press, because usually they don't cover it at all. There was a little bit of a coverage from there, but beyond that, that event really seemed to catch on in the independent media circles. It just seemed like it popped up in place after place on the internet, places that activists would typically go to for news, and saw reports of this, video reports from different organizations, and a lot of photos and written stories. And it did seem, at least that was the feeling that I got, and also heard the same thing from other people in Veterans for Peace, it really did seem as though the news of this was helpful in energizing people. But we did get a good response, and it really did seem to help energize the movement, which is exactly what we were hoping.
So this one is going to be a carry-on from that, this November, March 19th.
Yes, and we hope there'll be a lot more people there. And Daniel Ellsberg's coming back. He's going to get arrested again. Ralph Nader's going to be there. Ann Wright, retired colonel, is going to be speaking. Chris Hedges again. Zach Schott is one of the people that'll be speaking, and I'm sure that people are going to be impressed with what he's got to say, because it's really a salt of the earth story of somebody from Middle America that saw the light and learned what we don't get taught in school.
Zach, talk about how your generation, the IVAW folks, are viewing this war at this point. Is the membership growing? Where is the word amongst IVAW?
The membership is growing. It's not growing as much as we would like. And that just goes back to what you were saying. The war has become old to a lot of people, and especially our generation. Our generation is sadly brainwashed, you know. But as far as Iraq Veterans Against the War, I mean, we still take a hard stance on any of these occupations.
Let's talk about Bradley Manning. Here is a young man who apparently, Assange said that he doesn't know Bradley Manning, but apparently Bradley Manning has been instrumental in some of the WikiLeaks and has been really very severely punished. Most recently, it was actually at a very high level. Crowley stood up and said, yes, he is being punished, and it's actually stupid. And for that, the man lost his job. So what about Bradley Manning?
He is viewed as a hero amongst me and my activist friends in Iraq Veterans Against the War, VFP, all across the world, those that have recognized the atrocity in his solitary confinement and his mistreatment, you know, even without the charges even being pinned on him up until recently. We stand behind him 100%. It's really devastating the condition he's in and how there's not a whole lot that you know, we can do from, you know, to get to him, but we are fighting, you know, daily for his release and for his story to be told and for justice to be sought in his action. Just a few days ago, I mean, Bradley Manning was forced to strip down to his underwear and sit in solitary confinement. And it's just ridiculous the treatment that he's going through. You know, he sits in isolation, no books to read, no physical training to do. Doesn't get to wear his prescription glasses. He's cut off away from everything. And for a young man like that,
now he's about what, 22, right?
He's 23. For a PFC, a young man who I think at that age was 21. To go out and to do something like this, it's heroic, and it takes guts, and I have the utmost respect and admiration, and I think everyone else does too, and if they don't, they should. This man is a hero, and he's only, you know, paving the way for others to get the truth out there.
Yeah. Mike, in the Vietnam generation, is there someone that is parallel to what Bradley Manning has done from inside the service?
Well, Dan Ellsberg he had been in the Marines, and he was working for the RAND Corporation when he let loose the Pentagon Papers. And it's interesting to see the comparison. I think a lot of people today don't understand what a strong comparison there is, because as Ellsberg himself has said a number of times, the Pentagon Papers were something that I think just about everybody now recognizes to have been good for the country, because once people got a chance to see what some of the truth was behind the Vietnam War, that's always a good thing. It's necessary. And so now we have this information that's come out from the Iraq and Afghanistan War, and if the Pentagon Papers were good for America a generation ago, then the WikiLeaks revelations about Iraq and Afghanistan are good for the country today. And even though some people today, maybe even a lot of people, are hollering and screaming like this is some kind of terrible thing, I don't think it's going to be long before most of the people in this country realize that that information is something that we need so that we can begin to learn the truth. And that's absolutely essential if we're going to have anything close to a democracy. We've got to be able to get access to the truth, and unfortunately it takes courageous individuals like Dan Ellsberg and Bradley Manning to risk their careers and risk their freedom and possibly even risk their lives, because there's a charge now of aiding the enemy, which carries a death penalty against Bradley Manning. And so it's too bad that we have to rely on people that have this much courage and are willing to go through this much in order to find out what the heck our government's doing, but that's the way it is. And I think Brad Manning's going to be seen as a real hero for doing this among the population right now that doesn't even think he is.
A quick reminder that we're talking to Mike Ferner of Veterans for Peace and Zach Schott of Iraq Veterans Against War, and this is Raising Sand Radio. I'm Susan Gallimore. Let's go back to Zach Schott. You had a process that you had to go through to get to where you are now. You went into the military partly because you were what we call the poverty draft, right? You came from a small town, there wasn't a lot of work. But you've gone through an enormous evolution, I would imagine, in how you view your country at this point. And that has to be expanded to pretty much a very large number of people in this country, but it takes a long time for people to begin to recognize what the country or what direction the country is moving in. And someone like Bradley Manning is another signpost along the way that it's not easy to speak out against the big tides of what the direction that your country is moving in.
It's extremely hard to speak out. I mean, I spoke out for the first time in October of 08, and, you know, I've had my leaders bash me, and then some leaders come back who I had in the military and kind of see where what I was doing wasn't wrong. What I was doing was morally right, and it was saving lives. Not only our soldiers' lives, but the lives of those in Iraq and Afghanistan. It is extremely hard to speak out. You know, I suffer from post-traumatic stress, and you were talking about how one would view his country after such an evolution like that. I mean, I came back from Iraq with post-traumatic stress, and then once I started doing this research on what exactly it is that we were doing in Iraq and Afghanistan in the first place, and how the mission wasn't being accomplished, and how it was being portrayed to the American public as you know, reconstruction, winning hearts and minds, and the like, that only set me down a deeper path of post-traumatic stress. You know, like, I thought I was just going to have to deal with what I saw and did there, not my country lied to me and my buddies, and now I'm going to have to go through that trauma of why they would do such a thing and why they're still carrying these things out.
Uh-huh.
But yes, it is extremely hard to speak out, but it's the most powerful thing you can do, and you have, I mean, we don't have everybody in the streets every time we go and speak out, but we do have, I mean, like Mike and Ward Riley and other key members and veterans across the country and the world, you know, that make it that much easier, you know, because we all know, we all were there. We know what we saw, we know what we did, and we know what the country is doing right now, and we know what's wrong.
Do you still run into hostility?
Yes, I mean, just recently, 2 weeks ago, I was, I got an email from my command sergeant major who pinned a Purple Heart on me, talking about how what I was doing, you know, he had been following me since I'd been an activist, and what I was doing was a disloyalty and dishonor to my comrades and the fallen. So, I mean, I get stuff like this all the time, as I'm sure every other activist does. I mean, but it's just like, it's a little bit different now because these people are still over there fighting. And it's really difficult, but really uplifting now at the same time.
One imagines that what's going on in Wisconsin and a little bit in Ohio now is also a signpost along the way for people that haven't quite woken up to the realities yet.
Oh, of course.
Absolutely. And Veterans for Peace, our everyday slogan is exposing the true costs of war and militarism. And one of the, at least the economic costs of these wars, people are beginning to connect the dots, hopefully are doing so in a massive way. And we'll use that information to pressure the government to start putting money into things that we need. And just to give you, Susan, give you and your listeners one quick example, people can go to thecostofwar.com and get the running total for the amount of money that we spent in the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan so far. And there's different figures for what the state budget deficit is for Wisconsin, but the one, a pretty reasonable one of the different numbers that have come out is $6 billion in deficit. And the state of Wisconsin has sent over $12 billion to the war in Iraq and over $18 billion to the war in Iraq and Afghanistan. And that money obviously is gone. It's gone forever. But we have to reverse these trends and start saying, look, we have a lot of things here at home that are becoming collateral damage from this war. I mean, we're killing people directly in Iraq and Afghanistan, and part of the collateral damage is happening here in the United States with people and the injuries, and also to our cities where we may not be bombing them, but they're rotting away instead of being bombed, and the infrastructure needs to be replaced and all that sort of thing. So those parallels are there to be made, and that's part of what we're trying to bring out.
And regardless of how you feel about Obama's performance at this point, it's significant, I think, that no one is discussing how much of this actually was left as a legacy from the Bush administration. And no one has been charged from that administration.
Oh, that's important you brought that up. I mean, because here you have Bradley Manning, who is being charged with aiding and abetting the enemy, faces the death penalty. And then you have Rumsfeld, who has publicly come out and said, no, there were weapons of mass destruction, and other leaders of the public of the past administration who are coming out and coming forward and admitting the lies. And why are our soldiers, who are just carrying out the orders of those in the past administration, being the ones that are, you know, held to these charges? All they were doing was carrying out orders regardless. It's just hypocrisy. It really is.
It also plays into how quickly we forget things in this country, doesn't it? I mean, not only do we have to deal with the reality of what these wars are doing, which is something that we'd rather stay in denial about, but we just keep moving forward as if the last 8 years of the Bush administration, they're over now. We've moved on from there. Let's keep, you know, mission accomplished, so to speak.
Yeah, the mission that got accomplished was that the folks that are making a ton of money off of this war are continuing to do that. And the other part of the mission that is at least temporarily accomplished is the fact that the unfortunately the empire that the U.S. has turned into has been expanded, and we now have there's now a larger part of the world that's within our ability to project military power, as the Pentagon likes to say. So you know it has worked. It has been a success for a very small number of people, but for the vast majority of people that have had anything to do with it, it's been a tragedy.
Well, let's talk a little bit about how money is made from the war, because it sometimes seemed to me as though people don't actually understand the sequence of events. We pay our tax dollars, and what we expect back is so-called national security or national defense. Before we turn to Zach Schoten, how money is wasted in the war zone, Mike Ferner referenced well-known journalist, writer, and activist Chris Hedges, who was at the the Veterans for Peace vigil in the December vigil outside the White House. Here's what Chris Hedges had to say about money that day.
We can have peace if we shut down our network of military bases, stay the hand of Israel to create a Palestinian state and go home. Or we can have long, costly, and ultimately futile regional war. There is a direct correlation between our permanent war economy and the mounting foreclosures, unemployment, and collapse of our civil society.
That's right.
We cannot single out any national institutions anymore that can accurately be described as democratic. Surely not the highly manipulated, money-saturated elections, the lobby-infested Congress, the imperial presidency, the class-biased judicial and penal system, and least of all, the media. Yeah. Athenian democracy collapsed, Thucydides wrote, because of Athens' expanding empire. Athens became a tyrant abroad, and then a tyrant at home. The tyranny Athens imposed on others, it finally imposed on itself. And those who caution prudence and moderation, who remain within the grip of the Democratic Party, abet the crimes committed in our name and the snuffing out of our open society.
There was Chris Hedges at the December rally outside the White House. And now here's Zach Schoet on life and waste on the military base in Iraq.
A ridiculous amount of stuff gets thrown away on a daily basis. I mean, it's ridiculous what is over there, what you can find in Iraq and Afghanistan now to purchase and stuff. And then alongside with that, like ammunition, we waste so much ammunition going back to false intel, you know, all those the deals with false intel in my mission, and I'm sure everyone else's mission in Iraq and Afghanistan, the fuel, you know, and the manpower and everything needed to complete that mission, and it was all false, you know, that's money wasted. Each soldier, it cost $1 million to provide food, water, enough to basically house one soldier in country nowadays. That's a ridiculous high number. And then to count on top of that, the amount of ammunition and other things that we are wasting over there. And then that ammunition that we're wasting, I mean, that's going against the civilian casualties over there. And that's just another war atrocity that we're trying to stop.
And let's talk about a pizza. A pizza gets sent over by a company like, say, Domino's. That it's not a donation to the military. Domino's, for example, is actually making money on the food that they send over there, right?
Sure.
Every
good money.
Yeah, every company that is supplying the military in one way or another is making hand over fist money on that. And yet it's the taxpayer dollar that is supporting it. We don't get that money back in any way.
Well, if you look at an example that is fairly well known, just the mercenaries like Blackwater and some of the other private companies that were and still are working for the U.S. government in Afghanistan and Iraq, the rank and file workers for those companies were making over $100,000 a year, and they were doing work that was very similar to some of the work that Zach and his comrades were doing as far as traveling with and guarding fuel convoys and things of that sort. And they're making over $100,000 a year, and that's to say nothing of the people running the companies and what they're making. And then you have Halliburton's and all of the companies that are providing services that used to be provided by military members. When I was in Iraq and was at a forward operating base for a couple of days, it became clear to me finally how we were able to keep this war going without a draft. And the reason we've been able to do that is because about half of the personnel that's required in a war, about half of that is we're now currently contracting out to Halliburton and so forth. And they, after six subcontracts, it gets down to the person that actually does the work in Iraq. And there's civilians that are bringing in the food, and civilians that are cleaning the housing and the barracks, and all this stuff used to be done by members of the military, who, for one thing, get paid a whole lot less. But what happens is, it's considered money well spent by people in the White House and Congress, because, well, we don't have to go back to the public and say this is a really important war that we're doing and we're running short on men, so we got to start a draft, because they know that would blow up in their face. So they contract with companies that they're already related to in many cases. Those companies make a ton of money providing civilian support for the whole effort, and we can continue these kinds of wars and occupations because we don't need to have a draft. And it's a really cynical maneuver all the way around.
Zach, what was your annual pay in the military?
Oh my goodness. Well, I can tell you this, it wasn't $100,000.
I was figuring.
And I can also tell you this, that we, especially the boots on the ground, those troops, the infantry and well, basically everybody over there was doing more of the job than the contractors were. They were putting themselves at risk, but not nearly as much as we were. Our annual pay, I mean, we got hazardous duty pay, combat pay, and of course it was tax free. But I was making no more than maybe $3,000 a month, below average. Housing or for a family, below $40,000.
Yeah, and you don't have a family, right?
And I don't have a family.
Yeah.
But for that kind of seeing what this money is being done, I mean, I would give all of that money back just that I received for taking part in that mission, because that mission was so bogus, and it's only left me so much more like distant from the things that I used to respect and trust and love.
You're listening to Raising Sand Radio, and I'm Susan Gallimore talking about the waste that is war and why to resist and how, with Mike Ferner of Veterans for Peace and Zach Schaut of Iraq Veterans Against War. Visit our website, raisingsandradio.org, to learn more about our shows, all listed and downloadable for free. If you're feeling particularly generous, and I hope you are, make a tax-deductible donation through the website, Raising Sand Radio, and it will go to continuing to keep our programs running. It's not easy to do that these days. We are a radio program that represents in-depth progressive views and encourages ordinary people to learn as much as you can about our world and then to speak out about the injustice you see around you. We progressives need you now to make your voice heard, to speak out in support of Bradley Manning and to ensure his civil rights, human and health rights also are protected. He's been brave enough to put his life on the line for truth by releasing WikiLeaks documents, and now it's our turn to raise our voices and call for justice for Bradley Manning. Before we return to Mike Ferner of Veterans for Peace and Zach Schaut, a bit more of Dave Rovick's happy music to keep our spirits up after the revolution.
George Bush and Henry Kissinger were sent off to the world court. Their plans for global domination were preemptively cut short. Their weapons of mass destruction were inspected and destroyed. Battleships dismantled, never again to be deployed. And the world breathed a sigh of relief after the revolution.
With the push towards this worldwide sort of global neoliberal way of doing business, which is to privatize as much as we can, I wonder if the ultimate plan is to pretty much do away with the military, U.S. military, as we know it, and rely on these contractors, where, as you say, we don't have to deal with the public, which is just, you know, messy. They protest. They're annoying. You have to pay them. What do you think?
I think that they'll probably always be, for the foreseeable future, the United States will always have its military in some form. I think it's probably safe to say, along the lines of what you're saying, Susan, that it's in practical terms, it's going to continue to get smaller. For the reasons we were just mentioning, because more and more of the services are being contracted out, and also because the government officials are not answerable as they should be if they're using public institutions like the military, and they can get away with a lot of stuff and just simply refuse to tell people what's going on, because, well, this is a private company that's doing these sorts of things. They don't have to give away information because they're a private company, and they own this information. So it's not a question of being able to go to the government and say, look, this is public information. It was public money that paid for it, and we demand to know what's going on. We won't be able to do that.
Zach, when you were there, did you notice that the private contractors had better gear than the soldiers?
As far as weapon sights and everything, yes, they did. But they got to wear less gear. The more gear we wore was, of course, I mean, we weren't able to do the jobs that we could have done in the most efficient way. But they did have better gear, better food, better everything, better treatment. Life was good for a contractor in Iraq or Afghanistan.
And as far as you know, they were supplying their own ammunition and weaponry and all of that, right? It wasn't funneling through the Department of Defense in any way.
Yes.
Okay. So their own trucks there. I know sometimes you guys, the guys on the ground, would be protecting the contractors in certain situations, right?
Correct, yes.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about this other thing that's not really talked about very much. And as the Islamophobia goes up in this country, there's even less reason, it seems, to want to discuss this, is Guantanamo. Bradley Manning is not in Guantanamo. He's in Quantico, but Guantanamo continues, and apparently there are at least four other documented such prisons.
The operation of Guantanamo and these other prison sites are just a terrible blot on the United States. It shames me as a citizen to know that that we're treating people this way, and it has certainly contributed to the loss of friendliness and respect and prestige, however you want to put it, that the U.S. once enjoyed around the world. That has been terribly reduced, and you might say, well, who cares, except for the fact that if you do want to travel abroad, or your kids are going to go to school abroad, or you know, you ever want to get past the borders of the U.S., you have to deal with the rest of the world that at this point is not very happy at all with the United States. And it's really a shame because we for a long time have enjoyed the friendship probably more than we deserved of people in the Arab world and around the world. And now that is changing dramatically. And people are seeing how the United States really does operate. This country, if it hasn't already, we're in big danger of losing our national soul over how we have treated people in these prisons and the way we've conducted these wars. And the only way back from that is to prosecute the people who are responsible and make sure this doesn't happen again. But we're not moving in that direction at all, unfortunately.
And in fact, Obama has just recently reconfirmed the need for places like Guantanamo.
It's a travesty. It really is. It's just, to imagine what people are going through in Guantanamo and Bradley Manning, too, for that matter. There's literature out there that I hope people will become familiar with, you know, articles that have been printed in popular magazines that describe what people in these prisons have gone through. And it's really hard to believe that a country that we've thought fairly highly of for such a long time is capable of doing this to human beings, and it's we're going to pay the price.
Do you think that the treatment Bradley Manning is receiving in the solitary in Quantico is on a par with what's going on in Guantanamo?
It's different stuff. Some of it is on a par, yeah.
The solitary confinement.
Solitary confinement, sleep deprivation. In Guantanamo and other places, they made sure that the prisoners got little sleep by loud noises or banging sledgehammers against the wall next to them in the prison cell. In Bradley Manning's case, they have this neat little dodge where they've got him on suicide prevention watch, which means that every 5 minutes, all through the night, a guard will ask Bradley if he's still breathing, and the guard can demand and will usually be able to demand and get a verbal response. So that means every 5 minutes, Bradley Manning's being woken up. And if anybody knows anything at all about sleep deprivation, one of the best and quickest ways of driving somebody psychotic is to do exactly that. Mm.
It's not only a dehumanizing of Bradley Manning, but it also is a dehumanizing of that guard who has to do that on a regular basis.
Yeah. I just hope that some of the guards that are with Bradley now are getting ready to start speaking out about what's going on. Mm.
Oh, I was just going to say, Susan, torture is torture. I mean, any way you look at it, sleep deprivation and waterboarding, not having your prescription eyeglass, I mean, any of that, torture is torture, and Bradley Manning is being tortured up on the scale of Guantanamo, I think, which, ironically, isn't that funny that, you know, when we voted in Obama, those of us that did promised to close Guantanamo right off the bat, and here he's expressing the need to keep that open again. I just find that kind of kind of ironic.
Yeah, there was such a huge push to vote Obama in as president. How is that looking to you and to people that you know in IVAW at this point, Obama's performance, Zach?
Well, he's just like any other politician. I mean, but the thing is, he is carrying out the same deeds that George W. Bush was doing. I mean, we are still in Iraq. We don't have, you know, the combat troops, quote unquote, in Iraq. But I mean, but yet we're still losing combat troops in Iraq weekly. He hasn't done anything he said he would do. Guantanamo is still open. That was the huge thing that he said that he would do whenever he ran for president and during his campaign. The withdrawal of troops in Iraq and Afghanistan, I mean, none of that has happened. We've only seen an increase in troops in Afghanistan and a change of name of the troops in Iraq, you know, and change of mission. And I'm deeply disappointed. As you were saying earlier, I mean, or as Mike was saying, we're at a point almost where our nation's losing its soul, and we can't really afford that. Our children can't afford that.
And Mike, one of the things that IVAW and Veterans for Peace has in common is, as a Vietnam vet and subsequent decades since that war, we've noticed that unemployment, homelessness, suicides amongst vets from Vietnam still really hasn't diminished. It's ongoing. We're going to be seeing the same thing with the vets from these wars, are we not?
Oh, we are going to see it, and we're already seeing it. There's more deaths from suicide among Vietnam veterans than were killed in that war. 58,000 were killed during that war, and the suicide rate is growing exponentially among current day military, particularly for a variety of reasons among National Guard troops, but across all the services, the suicide rate is going up, and there's absolutely no reason to think that veterans of the current conflicts are going to be any better off long term than the Vietnam veterans are. In order to get a human being to be able to kill somebody, you have got to first dehumanize them and then dehumanize whoever the enemy of the day is. And then you have to train them over and over and over again so that they automatically do what's necessary to take another person's life. And you can't do that kind of training to someone and then just turn it off like a light switch when you don't need them in combat anymore. You've done something to that person. You've changed them. You've changed them for the rest of their lives. And if they and society are really lucky, they can come back around to being more humane than what the military left them. But, on a good number of cases, that doesn't happen. And the individual veteran and the society suffers as a result. You know, that's why I'm talking about the collateral damage. Whole communities are being affected by the violence and that veterans at times act out when they come back because of the PTSD and because of their training and lack of understanding in communities when they come back. And when they commit a violent act, that affects more than just them, more than just the victim. It affects the whole community. And you start multiplying that by the, 1.5 million or 2 million people now that have gone through Iraq and Afghanistan, and you see that those veterans are now returning to every community in the land, and you know that we're going to have a price to pay that's going to be exacted out of the backs of the veterans themselves, but also out of their families and communities. Mm-hmm. And that's what happens. And anybody in Congress or the administration who thinks that you can give more money to the VA or come up with a better pill and somehow take care of these problems that result from sending people into war, they are dreaming. Mm-hmm. And when you send people into war, this is what you get. You get violence at obviously at where the war is being fought, And when the people come home, you get violence and pain ever after that. And it's an equation. You just don't get around it.
Zach, can you speak to that, the training, and then also, if you wouldn't mind, talk about medication that you or people you know have been put on?
So the training, as far as what we had before we entered Iraq, was very kind of direct and indirect at the same time. As far as culturally what the country of Iraq was like and the difference between Sunni and Shia and these important things, those weren't taught to us at all. That training was not provided. However, whenever we would do live fire exercises, target practice, anything of the sort, portraying the enemy would have a rag on his head. He referred to as Haji. And that's how we were to see the enemy. That's how we were trained to see the enemy from the beginning. So you get to Iraq or Afghanistan or wherever it is, and, you know, that's, people wear that. And then you're like, okay, well, what is the enemy? So right off the bat, you're taught to recognize the whole country as an enemy, basically.
I think that there's a uptick in the use of medication in the military.
Oh, it's huge right now. Whenever I was in country, we had gunners that were on Ambien for sleep at night, but yet we weren't even getting to sleep half the time at night. So,
where did you get this medication? Who was handing it out?
Medication was being prescribed by our PAs in that were attached to our troops. Anytime you had any problem, the medication was ready available. Whenever I went back to Iraq, 120 clonopins and a few Xanax and Lexapro was already waiting for me, for me to get there, complete the mission, and medication, I guess, that they thought I needed to do it, which, I wouldn't trust anyone behind a 240 machine gun, doped up on Xanax or Ambien, but unfortunately that's what is so easily out there. And anybody's looking for any bit of an escape because of the things that they're having to take part in. And it's so...
So you get it just by asking.
You can get it just by asking.
Yeah.
Yes.
I was talking about pizzas, the pizza companies making money, but in fact the pharmaceutical companies are making hand over fist money from these wars too.
I would really like to get counseling rather than medication, but unfortunately nobody knows how to counsel on these type of things a lot.
Yeah. I want to be sure, we're coming to the end of our hour, I want to be sure that we've touched everything that you feel like people should know. So Mike, let's start with you. What is there that we haven't touched upon?
I think something we haven't really said too much about is the individual responsibility that we all have. We're supposed to be citizens of a republic, and we know what's happened to our democracy and all that, but we are still ultimately, the citizens are responsible, and we can't just point to Washington and condemn what's going on there and go about the rest of our lives, pay our taxes, all those sorts of things that allow the system to go on. Now, every one of us has got to look into our hearts and figure out what we can do. And there's something we can do no matter what walk of life we're in. There's always something that we can do to speak out, to show that we do not go along with these policies. And if we don't, that means we're going along with them. Just exactly what happened in Germany after the Second World War, we're going to be responsible for these war crimes, and although we're not going to be able to say we didn't know, because we know fully well.
And Zach?
I think it's just important it's noted that if we the people don't stop our government from committing these crimes and going about the way they have in the past, the rest of the world will, and that's really all there is about it. That's what it's just come down to.
Let's talk about how people can get in touch with either of you to learn more about the organizations that you represent, and also let's talk more about the event and how people can get involved. How can people get involved, get in touch with you, Zach?
Through Iraq Veterans Against the War, that web website is www.ivaw.org. And there you'll find all the information about what is coming up and what we have done in the past and, you know, what we plan to tackle in the future. Right now we're working on a few different campaigns, one called Operation Recovery. So that's a big thing that you can find us through. Another thing, and I mean it's simple, and I'm sure everyone has one, but Facebook. Get on Facebook. It's a huge networking tool. I mean, that's where the news flow is. You can find me on there, and you will get your scoop of the news.
So they should look for your name, which is, your last name is spelled C-H-O-A-T-E, right?
That is correct, yes.
Okay, so do a search on your name, and they'll find your Facebook.
They will, and they will find links to the other organizations, the certain VFP chapter groups, IVAW groups, and a whole network of other anti-war organizations and those fighting for peace.
Okay, so it's ivaw.org or search for Zach, Z-A-C-H, Choate, C-H-O-A-T-E. Look for his Facebook page.
Oh, and please join us on the 19th and 20th. Put that out there, listeners. There's plenty of information about the actions there. So
okay. Mike Foner?
People can contact Veterans for Peace at our website, which is veteransforpeace.org, and you can find out what we're doing there. Also, particularly about the actions on the 19th and the 20th in Washington, there's a website called stopthesewars.org, stopthesewars.org. And you can find out what's going to be going on with those activities. And we'd certainly like to invite people, if you live anywhere within a reasonable distance of Washington, D.C., to join us on the 19th and on the 20th at Quantico for Bradley Manning. And if you don't, find out what's going on in your community or organize something in your community, because we cannot let the 8th anniversary of the invasion of Iraq go by quietly.
Okay. Stopthesewars.org. Well, thank you so much, Zach Choate and Mike Foner, for being with us.
Thank you.
Before we end today, let's hear again from Chris Hedges at the December vigil against war outside the White House, and then we'll go out with Dave Rovics again after the revolution. Thanks for listening, and visit our website, RaisingSandRadio.org, or you can get directly in touch with me at Susan@RaisingSandRadio. We also have a telephone number now that you can reach me at if you want to. Leave a message for me at 510-545-8865. That's Raising Sand Radio, 510-545-8865. Be great to hear from you.
Those who recognize the injustice of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, as well as Iran, who can see that these wars are not only a violation of international law, but under post-Nuremberg laws are defined as criminal wars of aggression, yet continue to support a Democratic Party that supports these wars, have forfeited their rights as citizens. By allowing the status quo to go unchallenged, they become agents of injustice.
Yes.
To do nothing is to do something, and they practice a faux morality. They take refuge in the conception of themselves as moderates. They stand on what they insist is the middle ground without realizing that the middle ground has shifted under us, that the old paradigm of left and right, liberal and conservative, is meaningless in a world where, to quote Immanuel Kant, we live in a time of radical evil.